I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Marquise Dennis. He is the founder and executive director of Birthright Living Legacy. That's a Tulsa-based nonprofit dedicated to celebrating and supporting fatherhood in the Black community. Through powerful storytelling, community outreach, and advocacy, Marquise has transformed the way folks think about legacy, leadership, and the vital role of fathers. His passion for healing generational wounds and empowering families make him a dynamic force for change. Now, I don't care where you're coming from, what your background is. This is something you should tune into. And I will just say, I believe that if we can change the role of fathers in the American household, so many problems in our nation would be fixed. And so I don't care what your background is, tune in. This is going to be powerful. Marquise, welcome.
So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you know, when Camille first mentioned you to me, I was like, I need an introduction. I went and talked to him. Yeah, the little bit that she shared with me, I was like, this is somebody I want to have leaders and legacies, because I think you have an important mission. But let's kind of go back in time. And tell me a little bit about where you came from, how you're brought up, and just give us a little bit of your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing I do want to correct, though, is we are for all fathers, not just Black fathers or single fathers. It's an organization that helps all fathers because, as you mentioned, you know, fatherhood affects everyone. And so anytime we try to segregate it, we run into an issue where, you know, this person thinks, oh, this is not for me. Oh, this means that, nope. Fatherhood affects the poorhouse all the way to the White House.
I love that. And I appreciate that correction. Will you say that again? Fatherhood affects what?
It affects everyone from the poorhouse all the way to the White House. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, when Hunter Biden was going through all of his daddy issues, you know, it was a publicly worldwide thing. And, you know, his father was the president, you know, so it disembowels this idea that, oh, no, that doesn't affect me. I'm from this place, or I grew up with this kind of lifestyle, or I had this kind of privilege. It doesn't affect me. And this is why Birthright Living Legacy focuses on fathers as a whole, because when we start to talk about how it negatively impacts everyone, it's equal opportunity with these outcomes. It's just more prevalent or more seen in certain areas, just because of economic deinvestment and things of that nature. But as I've had to explain to people, you know, the Black population is only 14% of the population. They cannot be 100% of the problem.
That's a mathematical way of looking at it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's easier to make it a Christian thing or a Jewish thing or a Black or a white or a Hispanic, because then it's not your problem. It's not something that I have to do. But when you just say fathers, like, people have a hard time wrapping their mind around that. And as a guy that grew up, you know, I grew up in abject poverty, single mother outcomes. And so I grew up in North Tulsa, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the late 80s. You know, crack epidemic was heavy in our community. My mom got to this point where she just got tired of the situation and moved to a suburb called Broken Arrow. Now, in the suburb, I went from being one of millions to one of two. And then being the second only black family in this community, I was like, why is this so different? I thought I lived in a whole nother world. I had never seen a convenience store that wasn't a Circle K. I had never seen a bowling alley. Like, there were so many things. I was like, where did all this stuff come from? You know, I discovered a Brahms at the same time. I was like, wait, they have ice cream. Like, what is happening right now? And so what I ended up discovering through that is that, you know, in these other areas, I thought, you know, with my feeble young mind, these people have a better lifestyle because they're white. And that was as far as I could think about it. Well, as I got older, I realized that poverty is one of those things that strikes everyone. You know, there's trailer parks, just like there are neighborhoods that are no good to go into, just like there's, you know, barrios and so on and so forth. So what I started to dive into when I started to realize what was making these outcomes so prevalent in certain areas is I started to look into what happened to me, which was I lived in a single parent household. And so when I started to think back to this town or the city of Broken Arrow, I was like, wait a minute, everyone on my street had a father in the home. It didn't matter if they were Asian, if they were white, if they were black, everyone except for us had a father in the home. And so when I started to see how that dynamic worked, what it did was it gives you a opportunity for balance. You know, moms sometimes worked, sometimes they didn't work. But what it didn't do is it didn't put all of the pressure on one parent to do everything. I was a guy that struggled with reading, with homework and all this. Why? Because my mom was at work 90% of the time. It was me and my sister, latchkey kids, coming home, letting the TV, or what I like to refer to as the idiot box, program us. It raised us and taught us how to think, how to be, how to be.
Yeah, and let me jump in real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, something you said there about, you know, having it all on the mother. You know, I'm one of those people that believe that God designed men and women to be different, or more specifically, mothers and fathers to be different, that they bring different skills to the parenting, complementary skills.
Oh, yeah. And so what we say at Birthright is you get your values from mom, which is your morals, your ethics, and your, you know, your outlook, so to speak. And you get your value from dad, which is your worth, merit, and importance. And so when the two of those come together, or lack thereof, that's where you need to fill that gap, or what we like to call a God-sized hole that you're looking for men to fill. And so this is where you find the statistics going wrong. So 2 times more likely to have infant mortality death, 4 times more likely to be impoverished, 7 times more likely to be a teen pregnant, you know, alcohol abuse, physical abuse, obesity, all those things come from fatherless homes, or, you know, being absent of a dad present. And this could be, you know, bio dad. This could be a positive male role model of any sort where you don't have those, and those statistics start to come alive.
Yeah. Now you started figuring this out. You started making these observations as a kid, but you had a few bumps in the road.
Oh yeah. I mean, I grew up thinking that reaching out was the only way to go. And what I mean by that is, you know, a man is designed to do the 3-layer friendships. Okay. So you have those that came before you. So these are the older generation. And then you have your people that are your age that you reach out to, that you hang out, you go ride bikes and go and play in the creek, all that kind of jazz. And then you have the people that come after you. And so when I grew up with only the people that were around me. So their values, their morals, their ideals was all that I had to learn. And if you've ever been around a 15-year-old boy trying to learn sex talk from somebody his age, you can see how destructive that could become versus having someone that is older to be able to give you proper advice, proper guidance on how to utilize and beware of certain things. You know, when you're asking a 15-year-old boy or 16-year-old boy that has the same problem as you, pornography may be his only experience. And then once those things are introduced, you have an issue and you don't even know you have an issue. And so one of my mentors has said to me this statement that has stuck with me forever. You don't even know the conversations that you're missing. And it really hit home because I was like, wow, I don't even know what I don't know. I know what I think I know. And then he's saying, by me having my great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, I have such a wealth of knowledge and experience that I can tap into at any given time from any one of those individuals that are still living and from their journals or life stories from their wives or whatever that I can tap into. Whereas me, it's like Monopoly. I am starting over every time I go around. It's collect $200 and start over. And that's where we run into this generational issue. And this is why we're called Birthright Living Legacy. It's because we are trying to remind fathers that having a legacy is something you need to be thinking about, but it doesn't have to happen until you die. You can start today because your birthright used to be the one thing that you passed on. It was like, nope, this is Craig Andrews, father or son of such and such. And then whatever that came with, whatever your father did before you, you would inherit all of that greatness. But if you don't have anyone to vouch for you, so to speak, that makes you orphaned. Imagine what it's like to run around wondering who you are, whose you are, and why. And so as a young boy, trying to be impressionable, trying to fit in, trying to manage life, I don't know anything about the fact that, you know, the way that men bond is by picking on each other and yelling at each other and fighting and having fun. Like, I didn't know that that was normal. I just thought, man, nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. What is going on? So this is where you open the door for promiscuity, because then now you're looking for some woman to validate you. Then you're looking at drugs and alcohol to erase the pain because you don't know how to deal with the peer pressure that's going on. Your body's changing. All these things are happening and nobody to coach you through it. And so you start to shut down. You start to clam up. And then that's where you become a version of yourself that you may not even want to be, but it's the version of you that's respected. And that's how we have so many young people right now who are what we like to call crashing out so they can gain respect from people they don't even like.
Wow. Well, how'd that play out in your life?
So it played out in my life is I realized that I didn't like being broke. I ran into a situation where I had children outside of wedlock, which I would not suggest for anyone, but I had three different children by three different women and then got married and have two children with that, with my wife, Crystal. And so we have five children total. And so as a young man, I had my two children at the time and I was broke. I mean, I went to the bank, tried to write a check. When I was writing said check, the lady was like, Marquise, you're $287 negative, and I just could not figure out life. Well, a young lady was on the line with me while I was in the bank, and she called me back and was like, hey, I know you don't sell drugs, but I have a guy that said he's willing to, you know, give you X amount for this amount just based on my name. And I was like, I mean, even if I did sell drugs, I could get it way cheaper. Let me call you back. So I hung up, and that's what started me to discover that making money brought me what I thought were friends and power and influence. And that was the drug that I chose, which was trying to figure out how to become relevant.
Hang on. Are you saying it was the lady that worked at the bank that
made it? No. It was a lady I was on the phone with. It was a young lady. No, that would have been crazy, though, if the lady at the bank was like,
you know, you hear all sorts of things. You never know.
Hey, well, you know, I just heard yesterday, Jamal, I can't remember his name, the pastor in Atlanta, he's about to buy land to start growing weed for the church. They're fixing to get into the cannabis industry. So it's not too far-fetched these days.
Ah, that is just so disappointing. I mean, that's a different episode than we're doing. Yeah, but
absolutely.
There's a book out there called Tell Your Children. I think that's what it's called by, what's his name? Today's marijuana is dangerous and it's destroying lives. Yeah. And we'll cover that in another podcast, but that just grieves me so much to hear that the church is growing weed.
But you got to think about it like this, based on what we're talking about now. you have a generation. Well, we're three generations away from fathers being in homes. Let me give you a juxtaposition that you can hold into your head and hold true, right? If you think about Andy Griffith, right, versus Tim the Toolman Taylor. So Andy Griffith, father, pillar of the community, sheriff, he did all the things, you know, he gave all the quippy advice. He went fishing with us, taught him all these values. And then you had the guy that was not quite together yet, not quite mature, not, you know, quite all there. You had the Barney Fife, right? Funny guy, hilarious. Everybody loved him. Well, then you go to my generation. My generation, this is after Homer Simpson and Al Bundy were introduced in the same year in 1991. You go a couple of generations in, and now you have Tim the Toolman Taylor. Now, Tim is like a fourth child. Mom is working, come home to babysit the husband because he's just not capable of taking care of himself or the kids. He's seen as more of a glorified babysitter, right? But who's the guy that's put together? Who's the guy that everybody wants to be? Who's the smart guy? It's the single man, which is Al Borland. And so when you take those two generations and put them together, Barney Fife was not all together because he was not complete. He didn't have a wife to cause him to have to take those maturity steps. He didn't have his brain opened up because he didn't take care of a child that belonged to him that couldn't take care of itself. This is a God-given thing. Like, this is why men don't mature when women do. They have 9 months to develop and turn into mothers. They can't, you know, go to the sink. They have to change their eating habits. They're being sucked dry of their nutrients. Well, when fathers hold a baby and take care of that child for the first time that can't take care of itself, there's a section in his brain that opens that causes him to start thinking, like a father. And think about how many young men have been robbed of that opportunity to be there at birth, to be there engaged, to be there to take care of a child. They're always having to prove as fathers, well, you got to prove, are you capable? Are you able? Because you may not be able, but mothers, for whatever reason, seem like, oh, they're just, you know, they just pop out ready to go. And nobody is ready to go. Everyone needs to learn ways to be more engaged, more present. But if a dad doesn't know what he brings to parenting, it's easy to negate those things and act like a Tim the Toolman Taylor. Now, I love the show. Don't get me wrong. It was funny. It was hilarious. But now that I look back, I see how damaging that was. But Tim did the three-layer friendship. He had a Wilson who was over the gate, so he reached up to that guy to get wisdom, reached out to Al, and then he also, you know, was there for his kids. He was a great father, don't get me wrong. But the way that he was depicted made it seem like he would not be able to survive without Jill. Versus Andy Griffith, they were interdependent. His wife could make it without him, and Andy could make it without her. But they chose to make it work together, and they became what we all hope to get out of a world is a community of people that are working together, striving to create a better future for our kids. And it's hard to find these days.
Yeah. You know, I'd never thought about that. I mean, I'd seen, you know, like Married with Children, you know, I felt like that was just devastating for the American family. Mm-hmm. You know, the lessons that taught. But I'd never carried it all the way forward to Married with Children. But let's jump back a little bit. So you start dealing drugs.
Yeah.
What happened?
So I started to sell, and at the time it was just to try to pay rent, try to figure out a way to overcome child support. Child support is one of those things, man. They don't care how much money you have after. They make sure that they take what they want, and when they take what they want, you still get taxed on that money. And when you go to reach out for help, they say, hey, we have to count what you make before child support. And so that leaves me with no option, because the more I work, so if I work two jobs, they take more money. If I go to get a license to get promoted, they just take more money. So it's a demotivating process to say, hey, you know, if you just stay right where you're at, which is abject poverty, then you'll be okay. So it almost forces you into this process. So anyway, long story short, I made a phone call, friend came by, he laughed and thought, how crazy is this for you to be asking me? And then he said, you know, if there's anybody that can do it, it's you. You know so many people. And I said, sure, whatever. And so I started a process of, and this is before I knew business. This is before I knew that there were systems and processes in place. And so I modeled my drug business after a successful convenience store here in Oklahoma. And I was like, you know, if I just create these rules and operate by this process, it seems like it would be the same supply, demand. Like, I didn't even know these terms. I just making it up in my head as I was going. And when I did, I started to have employees. I started to create these opportunities. I found these, what do you call them, niches, so to speak. So I found that there was a lot of single mothers that smoked, and they had people coming in and out of their homes all the time. Anyway, they needed more money. And so I was like, hey, this is a way for you to actually profit from all these people trying to take advantage of you versus you just sitting around. I know you need money. This, you're already doing these things and taking these risks. We might as well go this route. And so I helped them to create business plans and all this stuff to do it, which was wild then, because now that I look at it, it's like, wow, I didn't even know that these were things that are actually marketable in the world of business, that you actually do this anytime you open a company or anything like that. So I created the system, helped them to understand how the process worked, grew really fast. It was always an issue trying to stay supplied, but, you know, managed to make a little over 8,000 a week. And it just was insane. Like, I lived a lifestyle that was not becoming of a young man. But what's crazy is no matter what happens, and this is where it really hits the rubber to the road. If you don't have the integrity to understand what you're doing, it doesn't matter how much money you make. Your blueprint in your mind is going to tell you that you're poor. So you're going to always operate as a poor person because you didn't have someone that you trusted, that you believed to speak life into you, which is where men and fathers and mentors come from. Mom can tell you stuff, but it's not going to be the same. And this is why it's so important, because as we teach the dads, like, your voice, your presence, and your touch are absolutely necessary in order for a young man or a young woman to fully develop into who they are. Dr. Warren Farrell has done a lot of research on this topic of helping people to understand how important that stuff is. So Dr. Ken Canfield, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of research that has started to show now. And so I was a young man that ended up, you know, taking these risks, doing the best I could. And then when I got this idea to create a facility where fathers could be fathers all the time, no matter what their circumstances were with their child's mother, I was like, man, you know, this would be great. And I didn't know it at the time, but this voice that was talking to me said, okay, well, what would that look like? And so I started to plan what it would look like in order for me to create a place where fathers could come, spend time with their kids, but also break generational curses, but also make sure that men become well-friended. And this is why I have to make sure that I correct people, is because it's easy to believe that, oh, I'm a father, I'm at home, I'm married, I'm providing for my kids. That doesn't count for me. But what they don't understand is it's great that you're the baseball coach, but you're also sharing yourself with all those other kids. Your kids are going to be resentful over time. It's great that you're showing up to all the events, but you're also on your phone. And so the kids, every time they look out into the audience, they see you talking. So they're thinking, oh, he's not paying attention. Oh, but yeah, you talk to me when we're at home, but you talk to me through a newspaper or as we're watching a TV show. We don't really spend one-on-one time where you're invested in me.
You know, and one thing I see when I'm out at, when I'm out eating, it just makes me so sad. I'll look and I'll see a family of four sitting at the table, and every one of them has their phone in their face.
Oh, yeah.
They're together. They're physically present.
Yeah.
But they're not together.
At all.
That's not eating together.
Yeah. And we've traded that presence for being present. And so being shoulder to shoulder is something that men share. Like if you and I were sitting in the same room, we could sit next to each other, not say a word, and still feel fulfilled. But women, for the most part, don't operate that way. They need to engage eye to eye, shoulder to shoulder, knee to knee kind of conversations, and so on and so forth. But in order for
But I would actually challenge that. I'm seeing that amongst women as well, where I feel like mobile phones have even made women less relational.
Oh yeah, it's made everyone less relational. I'm talking about how we're modeled. And so what is happening is with these devices, we've been programmed to believe that being around each other is the same as being engaged. Do you know they say Google was the killer of conversation? And the reason they say that is because, you know, back in the day, if you and I were arguing over a point like, hey, Babe Ruth hit 57 home runs, you'd be like, no, he hit 60. And I'd be like, no, it was 50. I'm telling you. And so we would just argue back and forth, having a great time, right? Well, now it's like Babe Ruth hit 57. You say, no, he hit 60. And then we just Google it. And now that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, well, and, you know, as we're, the one thing I want to make sure we don't miss as we're wrapping this up, because there are people listening that are probably making very solid incomes, you know, six-figure incomes, providing for their family, sending their, taking their kids to vacation, you know, on good vacations, and, you know, doing all the things they think they should be doing, but I think are probably still missing some of the things that you're talking about.
100%.
So what would you say to those folks?
I would say to them, I challenge fathers to not turn work off. I think we've all been taught this idea that when you go home from work, you know, you turn work off and you become a dad. I say BS. I say keep work on. The reason is because as fathers, we typically treat people at work better. We treat customers better. We're willing to go in, do the sales process where we're building rapport, finding the hot button, and then pouncing. If you do that to your wife and your children, you will be golden. Meaning, when you come home, phone off, just like they're a $1 million customer. If you had a $1 million customer come in, you wouldn't be texting and tyking and, you know, talk, you know, eating while they're doing their thing. You would sit down and give them full attention to make sure that you talk to them about their family or whatever it is that you know is going to get them excited. And then when you find out what they're interested in, you're just going to pounce on that and show how what your product is going to get them there. And do you know, Andrew, what the one product is that fathers sell? Parents, for the most part, but fathers, for mostly.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
What's that?
Influence. If you are not getting your children and your spouse to purchase influence from you, they are getting it from someone else. And so being able to make sure that you're getting that sell every day, meaning that you are giving them intentional time, it doesn't have to be hours. It could be 5 minutes a day. If I come home and give my kids, each individual, 5 minutes each, now they have grown to expect it. They start to trust. They start to let me in. And then I get the opportunity to influence them until I'm no longer here. And that's all you can ask for. You're not going to get perfect children to where they don't mess up. But the key is that they can trust you with their heart when they do, to say, hey, Dad, I missed it. This is what happened. And then you can give them the proper influence to help them, not berate them, not, you know, sometimes discipline is necessary, but you have to give them, depending on the ages and the stages, you have to make sure that your influence is key, that they value you, that they trust you, and they believe when you say it, that it means that their best interest is at heart when you said whatever it is that you say.
Well, Marquise, this is some powerful, powerful stuff. And I really appreciate you bringing this here. And I mean, I love the fact, you know, when you were talking about, you know, on the phones, I just feel like as a society, we need to change and we need to be more engaged with people. And the stakes are high. And I appreciate the work that you're doing. How can people find you, learn more about what you're doing, support what you're doing, and reach and connect with you?
The best way is at www.brlivinglegacy.org, and that's, you know, Bobby Richard Living Legacy. So it's just brlivinglegacy.org. Find us on all of the social media outlets, or you could just give us a call or a text at 918-922-9445. We got fatherhood summits, we got park crawls and events, and we would love to have you. Love to have you join in.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
My pleasure.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.